Great. So we are cool. so we are now speaking. I am talking after a 7 month. Well, I don't know if we talked since the 7 months we had any kind of contact.
Just anyway, email, I think, pretty all much, right. Yeah.
Anyway, Jeffrey Wells and Phil Contrino meet again in this very, very, very warm day over the July 4th weekend. And it's right this morning at 8 a.m. I was outside, and it was getting really muggy, even at 8 o'clock in the morning. So God forbid what it's like now. But so you're in at home, or where are you?
I'm in D.C. now.
Okay.
I actually moved to D.C.
You have moved to Washington, D.C. Okay. So you alone, yeah, or with roommates, or what's going on? What about your girlfriend?
No, it's my girlfriend.
Okay, you guys are living together. Great, that's good. And where does she work, if I may ask?
She does nonprofit stuff, NGO kind of work.
Okay.
She works with an organization called MAG.
Mm-hmm.
They work on clearing minefields out in other countries. So. Good stuff.
NAG sounds like, obviously it sounds like an organization that's about guilt-tripping legislators and other people in the position to do things about problems by bothering them, by hectoring them, by nagging them. Right?
No, I wouldn't put it that way. I mean,
no, it sounds like that. I'm not saying that literally is that. You know,
so. Yeah. It's. I mean, they do good work because, I mean, it's still a big problem and a lot of people, mm-hmm, you know, die all the time from it. But, right, you know, it's... Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So the big topic number one from yesterday, which is the to me it was surprising that the Lone Ranger underperformed, I think is the polite way of putting it. Others were saying the new John Connor.
John Carter.
John Carter. I think John Connor is from Terminator. Okay. So you were telling me before it happened that this was in the cards. So can you tell me why that film didn't seem to happen? What's your impression about why it didn't? What were they looking for, first of all, Phil? Were they looking for 60 or 70? What was the minimum successful weekend haul for this film to not be called a failure?
Yeah, I mean, the tracking that came out from the studios was saying 70, and when we read that, we were like, there's no way, because just in general, the tracking's been really off this summer.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, if it was a good Johnny Depp movie from Disney and from Gore Verbinski, then yeah, 70 million is realistic. But you knew from the trailers and from what we were seeing on Facebook and Twitter that this thing just wasn't catching on. And I think the big part of it is, you know, you have a Disney movie that's going up against Despicable Me 2, which is a juggernaut for families. I mean, it's completely safe to take, like, a, you know, 3-year-old kid to go see Despicable Me.
Mm.
And then word comes out that Lone Ranger is this kind of violent, you know, bizarre, you know, all over the place Western. And, you know, families find out about that. We live in an era when, you know, word of mouth can kill a movie a lot faster than it used to. I mean, back in like the 90s, Disney would have got away with this. They would have at least had the opening weekend for Lone Ranger, and then it would have, you know, fallen off the cliff. That's not the case anymore. It opens Tuesday night,
mm-hmm,
you know, at like the 7 and 10 o'clock shows. Word gets out, and then by the time Wednesday rolls around and it's playing at its regular times, people already know it's a stinker. So, yeah, that's what happened.
What would you... just spitball, if they had to do it over again, number one, make it shorter. Number two, not have the guy eat part of the guy's heart or something. Wasn't that the big scene everybody was talking about?
Shorter. I mean, I don't know who to blame for this idea that blockbuster movies need to be 2 hours and, mm-hmm, 30 minutes. It's absurd. I mean, I guess, I don't know, Michael Bay and Christopher Nolan recently, you know, because, mm-hmm, they get away with it, but... there's no reason a movie like Lone Ranger should be 2.5 hours. That's like a 90-minute movie. Mm-hmm. Get people in, get them out, keep them happy. And yeah, I mean, for Disney to put their name behind something that's that violent, I mean, that's not what people expect from Disney. And, you know, for better or worse, mm-hmm, you know, that's their brand, and they need to protect their brand. And I think they know that this hurt them a bit. You know, this is kind of... I mean, Disney's going to keep going. People are still going to go to see Disney movies, but, mm-hmm, you burn a lot of your customers doing
Right.
something like that. So,
And what about
have you
the
seen it yet? Or are you just going to totally pass
I
on?
totally tried to see it. I just not that I don't want to see it. I feel that almost historically I'm obliged to, and I was actually thinking of trying to see it this weekend somewhere up in Connecticut, and I'm going up to see my mom. So yeah,
Sure.
I'm going to suffer through it.
Yeah.
I don't think it's responsible to just ignore, but I want to see the heart scene, the heart eating scene, if for nothing else. What was your impression of that when you first saw it?
Well,
What
no,
was
I
it?
haven't seen it yet either. I mean, I'm
Oh,
gonna catch it with an audience too, probably either like tonight or tomorrow, because
okay.
I like to, and especially movies that bomb, I like to watch them with an audience because you really get a sense of, okay, this is why it's not connecting. Because I mean, we knew probably 7 months ago the critics weren't going to be in the bag for this thing. You could have predicted that a mile away. So critics are going to be snarky. I want to see the way it plays with an actual audience. And maybe even like a matinee. I honestly want to see, go to a show where kids are there with their parents and see exactly how they react. And if, parents are storming out with their kids and stuff like that. I mean, maybe it sounds morbid, but I feel you learn a lot about that in terms of, what plays and what doesn't. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
So what? So they were ideally, just to go over the basic numbers one more time, they were looking for 60 or 70, more like 70, and then they were looking for a multiple of at least 3, which means it would have ultimately wound up over 200, I guess, with that ideal scenario. What do you see it doing now, given the?
Wow. I mean, it just keeps dropping. We got the early numbers on Friday, and it looked like it was still on pace for maybe 60, and then stuff comes in on, Thursday morning, and it dropped already. So it just keeps falling. I mean, for the 5 day, it's going to end up probably somewhere around like 50 million, I think, and even that's not guaranteed. So for its whole run, I don't know, something like this with bad word of mouth. I mean, maybe 120, 130 in North America. And there's still a chance it could do really well overseas. I'm not gonna, rule that out because Johnny Depp is, one of the most recognizable faces. But when you have a North American opening that's that weak, and when the movie is kind of regarded in such a low way, I don't see how they do a sequel here. It's just not gonna happen. And the one thing I think people need to point out here is poor Armie Hammer. I mean, this guy just can't catch a break,
He was chosen because he's not he's presentable and good looking, and he has a good nice likable personality, and but he's not strong enough to compete with Depp, and they wanted Depp to be the lead, obviously, so right.
Well, it's also, I mean, the guy has made choices after Social Network. He was on fire after that. He's made choices that sound great on paper and flopped big time. Who wouldn't do a Clint Eastwood movie with Leonardo DiCaprio when you're a young actor? That's a no-brainer. Bomb.
Absolutely.
Who wouldn't do a Gore Verbinski Disney movie with Johnny Depp when you're a young actor? That's a no-brainer. Bomb. Like he just can't catch a break, and he's a talented guy. So I'm worried that this is going to plague him, and this is going to kind of hinder what could be, a very, good career, I think, because he's got something, that's for sure.
He also was in one of the Snow White movies.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah. Mirror, mirror.
But you know what was
So.
great about that movie? The very end, when the director of Indian nationality decided to do a kind of a Bollywood ending with Bollywood music, it was cool. All of a sudden, it came alive. That remember that very end sequence?
It's Tapar Singh. Yeah, he's an interesting director. Yeah, but I mean, this guy can't catch a break. So,
Well, he's got to do maybe something small or something, but you're right. He has made what sounds like reasonable, not stupid choices, and it's like if you get three iffy things, it's almost on some level people feel that's your karma to fail. It's not you. It's not the movies that failed. Somehow you have failed by being in them. You're part of the failure, and it's not fair. But people tend to think of you in those terms unless you do something that works, at least artistically, at least critically.
yeah, well, I mean, that reminds me, that's like basically what happened to Taylor Kitsch after John Carter, because he also had Battleship too. Well, Battleship came after John Carter, and most people just consider him done. Like, that's it. You can survive a couple bombs in the middle of your career after you've had some hits. You can always come back from it, but in the beginning of your career when that happens, it's toxic. It's like you can't – it's really hard to rebound from it. So, yeah, I hope he does. I agree with what you said about doing something small. He needs to get – he needs to get behind a really good director that does kind of just a mid-level, you know, serious drama and show his chops. And even if he's not the star of it, he does something like that, then I think his momentum would pick up again. But I don't think he's going to. I've heard these rumors. I don't know if they're true. I think he's denied them, but that he might be Ant-Man in one of the Marvel movies. And ooh, that just sounds
that
like...
that sounds awful.
Yeah,
it's like, come on, man. I mean... Not the right decision. I mean, yeah, he's never gonna have to work again, and he's probably at that point already from these movies. But you know, what do you want? What do you want out of your career? That's that's what you have to ask yourself. So,
so I'm gonna next week. By the way, is the only really bright light in the screening situation, as far as I'm concerned, anyway, is the Woody Allen, which they start to show on Wednesday, which I hear is quite strong and quite good, but not necessarily a crowd pleaser, because Kate Blanchett's character, who's basically, if you accept the analogy that this is essentially Woody Allen's take on Streetcar Named Desire, she's not a altogether likable figure, but it sounds like a really good thing for her performance-wise.
Yeah, I'm seeing that on the 15th, so I mean, we get, you know, we're a little bit behind the curve on New York, but yeah, I'm pumped for that. I like that the Woody Allen movies are opening during the summer now, it seems, because it's such like a, it's a breath of fresh air. They usually hit like around, you know, June or July, when you've got this kind of, you know, blockbuster fatigue going on. So yeah, I've heard a lot. Have you talked to anybody who's seen it earlier?
I haven't talked to anybody directly who has seen it yet. No, only the people. There's a guy who posted something, and there's the also the writer who spoke to Woody Allen and for the Wall Street Journal, and that was, he'd clearly seen it. So you know, it doesn't sound too bad. It sounds intriguing. Sounds good. Sounds like it might be one of his every third or fourth film, maybe every fifth film, he really hits it. And the others are just pretty good or not bad or that's a mess.
I feel like generally, at least for me, he's been on a pretty just decent streak. I mean, even To Rome with Love, a lot of people didn't like that. I thought there was a lot in it to kind of latch onto and enjoy. So I think he's in a late, you know, very late still kind of surge. I mean, the only thing from his recently that I didn't like was Scoop.
Oh, that was pretty bad. Yeah.
So, but it, you know, in terms of the summer, it hasn't been bad. I mean, you can't complain about any summer when you get, you know, Francis Ha and Before Midnight and now Woody Allen movie. You know, I'll take it in terms of kind of programming. And I mean, Before Midnight, that's still hanging on. I mean, people are still going to see that. It's still, you know, doing its thing at the box office. So
I thought the general or read or take on the performance of that film is that people saw it and said, well, relationship drama, if you will, but perfect for a stay at home with your girlfriend, and it's not necessarily something you want to go out and go to town at a theater for. And this is a video on demand.
You know, it depends. I mean, it depends if you're a glass half full, glass, you know, half empty type. I mean, I think anytime a movie like that can do, you know, like $5 million in theaters, it's to me a success, because I'm sure they didn't spend a lot on it, and I don't think they really had to market it, you know, that much. It had its built-in base. I think, if anything, people were disappointed in the tone of it, because, you know, the first two movies were so kind of head over heels and happy, and then that last scene in the hotel room is just brutal. I mean,
that's where it takes off, if you ask me. That's where it gets really intense.
I was sitting there like, I couldn't believe how good that was. Mm. You know, and I joke with people that it makes the, you know, confrontation scene in Eyes Wide Shut look like two teenagers bickering. Yeah. You know, it's like, it's just stick the knife in, brutal.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Have you seen Pacific Rim yet? Are they screening that in New York?
I was allowed to see it. And,
okay.
Yeah, I was. The deal is I'm supposed to wait until something like the. Well, I think they might have said something like opening day or something, or the day or two before. But I can at least say that there is plenty to respect from a technical point of view and
Okay.
a follow-through point of view. In other words, every frame, it's very exacting, and as far as spectacle is concerned, you have to give it. I mean, it's a matter of, I'm not I'm not the target audience. I'm not fanboyish enough. I'm more of a lover of Mama, which he produced and worked on. And I'm more of, I like his smaller films. I'm a Pan's Labyrinth type of guy rather than a Blade or a, you know what I'm saying. So I didn't, so it's not really in my wheelhouse, but it's very, very unique, and I've never seen anything like this. And it's really quite, you're going to come away from, well, I've never seen that before. And that is pretty amazing. And that's, what the best shot, I got to say, just one exuber thing. There's that one shot that's in the early trailer of one of the beasts, one of the monsters, one of the amphibious monsters, tearing up the Golden Gate Bridge. And it's a fairly quick shot, but it's so well rendered, and it feels genuine. As if you actually had somebody with a camera and this was actually happening. I just thought it was one of the best shots of the whole thing, and yet it was in the trailer a long time ago. But that was like, I'll never forget that. I mean, that's something. So.
Yeah, I mean, I'm rooting for it because if the studios are just going to keep making these kind of big budget type deals like this that are Transformers. Wannabes in a sense. I'd rather have someone like Guillermo del Toro behind it than a Michael Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And that early tracking stuff worries me. I mean, I don't think it's going to be, they put out that number like as low as 25 million or something like that. And I don't see that happening, but it just doesn't see, and also from what we're seeing, it doesn't look like it's going to click. I mean, maybe word of mouth might save it once people take a chance on it, but it's just not there, and that sucks because it's like.
Well, it is completely without. I mean, there. It's been said that there's a Japanese actress character whose name I should be able to recite like that, and it's not coming to me. But she's. I'll tell you what. Just not to be a complete jerk about this, let me just find her name. But
yeah,
she's the female lead in it. Her name is Rinko Kikuchi. She was in Alejandro Gonzalo's Iñárritu's film. Babel, I believe.
Yep.
And she is the lead. And a lot of women have allegedly been saying in recruited screenings that this is great because this is a woman who has real power and real passion, and it's not about falling in love with a hero. So it's pretty cool. So I mean, on that level alone, you think maybe there's some female, but it's just the whole thing feels so fanboyish and so male.
It is, yeah. It is. It's definitely not, as they say, the four quadrant thing. I don't see, women really wanting to go to this opening weekend. I just don't see it. But hopefully that gets out, that it's got a strong female character in it, and maybe that can help revive it. But
right.
No, I mean, I just don't see it clicking. And that stinks because, I mean, every time I've heard Guillermo del Toro talk about it, it sounds like he had a lot of fun making it. I'd like to see him kind of, be embraced by Warner Brothers and that they would let him, make more movies there of this size and give him kind of the budget to do crazy things. But I don't know if this bombs, that'll discourage him from doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Can you speak? It seems like it would play really well overseas because doesn't it have a lot in it that's kind of either set in other countries or I don't know if you can even talk about that, but
a lot of the finale is set in Hong Kong. It's largely set in the Asian area, but I'll say that it's very efficiently done. This is not some piece of it hasn't been phoned in by in any way, shape, or form. It's very, very hands in, and there's lots of personality. There's a couple of nerd characters who are it really just you can feel the Del Toro's personality and his love of these guys. So it's really got a lot of detail and a lot of character in it. It's got flavor. It's not some rote thing by any stretch. So it really deserves respect on that level.
I bet overseas can be the savior of this thing. Because, I mean, even if it does something really mediocre here, like maybe 150 million or something, and it just destroys overseas, especially in China. I mean, it sounds like it could play really well in China because they love Transformers there too.
Right.
You know, maybe that could save it, and maybe that, you know, Warner Brothers at the end of the day will, you know, be happy about it. I hope that happens. I mean,
what's the figure? Yeah. What percentage is overseas these days? Something in the vicinity of 67, 68%, something like that, right?
That's what I've heard. It's hard to nail down because, I mean, every territory, I think, is a little different. And, you know, you look at China, which everybody talks about, and the cuts of what you get there, that's even more kind of, you know, tricky. I mean, you're lucky if you see 40% from your China release, and that's if you can manage to get that, you know, co-production status that everybody, you know, strives after. I mean, I would say on average, studios probably get like maybe 25 or 30% from China, but it, I mean, it's so huge that even 25 or 30% from a market like that is significant. But you know, we'll see what happens.
Anyway, the film that is expected still—I don't know if this is the case—but the film that is expected to vanquish Pacific Rim is called Grown Ups 2. It's the which I didn't, you know, it's funny, I'm not even sure, in fact, I'll might as well just say it, I don't think I even saw Grown Ups 1, because I knew right away I didn't want to see this thing, and, but I guess I, but because it's got Chris Rock in it, it's got Sandler, it's got David Spade, I gotta see this one at least, I'm gonna at least go to it, I'm gonna, you know, Dennis Dugan, I know exactly what it's gonna be, but I'm going anyway.
I mean, the first one was a total, you know, kind of just a circle jerk in a lot of ways. I mean, it's like you can tell they were just on set kind of, you know, fudging it as they go, improvising, whatever. And if you like those guys and you want to watch them improvise, it's fine. But it was just kind of, I don't know, it was hard to get through. But yeah, I mean, if Grown Ups 2 does end up topping Pacific Rim, that's just kind of, that's embarrassing. I mean, that, not only from the fact that, you know, Warner Brothers spent so much more money on Pacific Rim than Grown Ups 2.
This is the democracy of the box office. People say you spent much more money on this than the other guys did on Grown Ups 2. Gee, okay. Well, guess what, guys? We don't give a shit. We're going to see what we want to see.
Well, exactly. Yeah, I mean, there's this expectation that if you spend more money on something, then it's going to make more money, and that couldn't be really. That's not the case a lot of the time. I mean, even looking like something like The Purge, you know, they spend nothing on that, and it opened to, you know, something like 35 million or more or something. You know, you don't need it. It's the one thing Hollywood, you know, it's always goes back to content, one way or the other, and. Whether it's and that doesn't mean it's good content, but at the end of the day, people when they're going to pick a movie, they want something that like they can easily digest right away and make the decision.
Right.
But you know, with Grown Ups 2, I wouldn't be surprised if there's like that Netflix backlash you were talking about with you know Before Midnight. In the flip side of it, with Grown Ups 2, I mean that's not a movie that you feel like you have to see on the big screen. You know.
Yeah. But. Yeah. Hey, by the way, what do you think of the idea of clearly the Weinstein people are? I would be very surprised if Fruitvale Station doesn't end up as one of the Best Picture nominees. I mean, it might not, you know, but right now it feels like it almost has that that headwind already, and it's opening counter programming in a way. They're not doing a fall release, but they're opening it July 12th. They're having a press day pretty soon, and there's going to be this whole, you know, open now and then have people remind or be remembered or be, you know, pestered about it in November, December. So is that a wise way to go, do you think? Have you seen the film, Fruitvale Station?
I haven't seen it yet. I don't think they've even screened it here yet. But no, I think it's smart because people forget that, look, if you want to have an Oscar contender, you don't just have to cram it into, you know, November and December. There's kind of a bottleneck that happens. And in a smaller movie like Fruitvale Station could easily get lost in that kind of, you know, fuss. So yeah, I think it's smart. Open it in July when people are kind of in the mood for some kind of, you know, counter programming, and then yeah, remind people about it later. I mean, look, if there's anybody that knows how to manage a movie and nurture it and get it Oscar nominations, it's the Weinstein Company. You know, nobody beats them. It's there's no choice about it. So, and what are their other players this year? They have the Nicole Kidman movie. That'll be probably pretty high profile.
Are you talking about the Princess Grace movie?
Grace of Monaco. Yeah. I forget also. They have another high profile thing, I think, later in the year that they're probably saving more momentum for.
I thought they were the distributor, maybe I'm wrong, but I thought they were the distributor of August Osage County.
That's it. Yeah, that's their big one. Yeah, I mean, I think that's where they'll put all their muscle behind. Mm-hmm. And that also seems like it'll – I think that'll connect commercially too, because there's just so many people in it. And I don't know. Have you seen the play, though? I heard it's a pretty raw, you know, no holds barred kind of –
It's if it really will have a very strong mother daughter women in general, because it's major conflict between a not very supportive kind of a needling terribly admirable but at the same time strong mother and the younger daughter standing up to the strong mother, and it's really a very pretty intense conflict. But it's also about any number of other side stories that are also happening underneath the roof of this home in Oklahoma. It's pretty intense, and I thought it was a knockout. I mean, I saw the 3-hour play back in what was it, 2009 or something. Mm-hmm. And it's really. Tom O'Neill says you cannot go with any assumptions just because it worked on stage and it did well at the Tonys and everybody was the rage to see. It doesn't mean it's going to work as a film, particularly with a director that you'd have to classify John Wells as more of a kind of a journeyman, more of a guy. He's not exactly he's not Roman Polanski. He's not as strong. He's not Scorsese. He's somebody who's probably, and I hope he is, good enough to just let the material shine on its own without getting in the way. That's what I hope he does, and I hope it works. But it's, you know, it's all in the cutting, and how long do they want it to go? I know they didn't want it to go the 3 hours. They had to trim it down, so who knows?
Yeah, I mean, no, that's a good point, you know, from Tom. Because look at, God of Carnage, that, you know, I mean, I like that movie, but even, you know, that kind of sunk without a trace. So yeah, just because you've got success in one end, and cutting it from 3 hours to whatever it is, I mean, you know, maybe that'll have a pretty, you know, drastic effect on it, and really hurt it. But, you know, I'm not surprised that they would do that. They don't want to, you know, a 3-hour, you know, melodrama that's like box office poison. I can just see Harvey Weinstein's, you know, like blood vessels in his brain popping at the thought of releasing something like that. But yeah, so you're definitely 100% in the Fruitvale Station camp.
I think it's clearly connects with people, and it's got powerful performances from just about everyone. It's believable, and it's well rendered. It's well balanced. It doesn't feel it's the work of a guy who's like Ryan Coogler is like 28 or something. So it's pretty awesome. And I just feel the current after the screening I attended in Cannes. Of course, the current in Sundance was huge.
Jeff, is there like a vacuum going on in the background?
Yeah, I regret to say that Ori is here, and we should probably wrap it up anyway. I just want to say briefly, even despite the vacuum, that one of the most reviled films of the year will open on July 19th. Only if God forgives, Nicholas Winding Refn's film with Ryan Gosling and Chris Scott Thomas. It's almost worth seeing for how appallingly unsatisfying and just repulsive it is. But who knows? You know.
Yeah, I like Drive, so I was bummed to hear that.
Everybody that liked Drive wants to see it. Everybody wants to give it a pass. Everybody wants to go there. I have felt exactly the same way. I was out of it within a matter of 15, 20 minutes. But.
Wow. That sucks. Yeah. All right. Well, I guess we can call it a day here.
Yeah. Okay. It was great talking to you. Let's do it again soon. Really good to hear from you again. And let's just keep going and see where things are next week.
Okay. Sounds good, Jeff. Talk to you soon.
Take care. Bye-bye.